Episode 5 of Moon Knight made me laugh. It made me cry. It made me feel. A full review and breakdown of what I think is the single best episode of Marvel Television yet, coming up right now on 15 Minutes of Marvel.
There was an idea.
So if we can't protect the Earth, you can be damn well sure we'll avenge it.
We're gonna do this all day.
What are they called again?
Annulax batteries.
Harvey Larry batteries.
As far as I'm concerned, that's America's ass.
I control the truth. Mysterio is the truth.
Boom. You looking for this?
What is up? What is up? And welcome back to 15 Minutes of Marvel, the only podcast that gives you Marvel reviews, news, and rumors in pretty much 15 minutes. I'm your host, Ethan Simi. Today on the pod, I'm talking all about episode 5 of Moon Knight, the dark depths of trauma, the glorious life of self-acceptance, and everything in between. We're going to go through this episode together. We're going to talk about it. Like I said, what I think is the single best episode of Marvel Television to date. And I can back that up. I've come with receipts. I'm ready to prove why that is the case, whether it be a hot take or not. But I want to start out with some hot, fast news coming in right now as I'm recording this. Disney is hosting their panel at CinemaCon. It's going on right now. Things are going crazy. Things are going wild. The first few minutes of Black Panther Wakanda Forever was shown. It appeared to be a battle scene. People are loving it. And the first 20 minutes of Doctor Strange in the Multiverse of Madness was shown as well. I hear on good word that it's quite good stuff. I haven't seen a lot of spoilers out there. I don't think people want to spoil it. Thankfully so. But, you know, the movie comes out in just over a week. So I think we can last. I think we can manage. But Disney making some moves, Marvel making some moves at CinemaCon. Kevin Feige, also on the stage at CinemaCon, announced that he is headed to a retreat directly after CinemaCon to plan with executives of Marvel Studios the next 10 years of Marvel, the next 10 years of MCU content, movies, projects, shows. I said 10 years. I didn't say 2. I didn't say 4 or 7. I said 10, a decade worth of planning. That is incredible, complete cohesion from Feige and team to be in a state where they can say, let's plan the next 10 years of Marvel content, existing characters, new stories. That's very, very, very exciting. So some cool news coming out of CinemaCon. Follow Eric Davis on Twitter. He's been a guest on this podcast before. Great guy. Works for Fandango. If you're looking for more info on CinemaCon, movies in general, he's always coming out with some exclusive and breaking news. Gotta give a shout out to Eric. Wonderful, wonderful guy. CinemaCon sounds great. Let's talk about Moon Knight Episode 5. Because after all, that is what I am here to do. That is what you have tuned in for, is Moon Knight Episode 5. And I want to start off this conversation by saying, like I said, I truly do think this is the single best episode of Marvel Television yet, with Loki Episode 6 right behind that. And now, that might be a hot take. I don't know. I might be coming in hot, and you might be saying, Ethan, whoa, pump the brakes. Like, you just watched this episode. How can it be the best? And I'm here to tell you. I'm here to prove it. Because I firmly stand behind this take, this fact, if you will, because I just rewatched the entirety of Loki Season 1 last week, culminating in an Episode 6 commentary episode, came out last week on the pod. Go check that out if you haven't yet. Some incredible thoughts on the finale of Loki, where Season 2 is headed, and why Season 1 was so damn good. But that episode was so important on so many levels. You've got themes of self-acceptance, self-doubt, action, the long monologue from He Who Remains, all top-tier shit from Loki Episode 6. Now, this episode of Moon Knight takes what was done there and escalates it. It pushes it to bigger boundaries of diving into this dark trauma, diving into the pain that we all suffer on some level. Whether you think so or not, it's on some level, and the coping mechanisms that we all enact to deal with that pain. This is the episode. I truly thought, and I didn't know anything going into this episode. I was fresh, I was free, off social media, did not go on Twitter until I watched this episode. And I went in with an open mind, and I had no clue what to expect. I felt like This is the episode where Marvel found their secret sauce. I feel like they've added the final spice, the final herb or ingredient to this magic mix of sauce here, of spices, and they've got it. They've nailed it down because this is the episode where Marvel figured out how to maximize the potential of intimate character-based storytelling with some action and some plot movement. We've had close episodes before. Like I said, episode 6 of Loki is up there. That's the best example that I can give. Where you've got some incredible world-building, storytelling, intimate character development mixed with action. This is the episode where I thought to myself, where I was watching it partway through and I go, this is it. They've clicked. This is the pivotal turning moment where if they can replicate this, if they can do this for episode 5s, and if they can take this and do it on a smaller scale for other episodes that are equally important in character development, then they have a true plan on their hands. They have a true gold standard in terms of finally figuring it out, because I feel like they've been so close before, but they just don't allow us time to sit with a character, to be immersed in the character's pain or trauma or glory or whatever it ends up being, that we just don't get to sit with it. And this episode, we did. The main focus of this episode, we are taking a look at understanding both Steven and Mark, how they exist both independently of each other and in conjunction with one another, understanding why they both exist, essentially. And I thought that was a really smart storytelling decision to physically manifest a Steven and a Mark so we can have those conversations, so we can see how Mark feels about Steven understanding and learning about so much trauma, and how Steven feels about understanding that Mark had to undergo all of this trauma and vice versa. I think the twist at the end of episode 4 threw me off a little bit. I just want to say I wasn't super impressed. It felt like it felt more like a show than for a meaningful story or show progression, that twist in episode 4. So maybe I was a little sour, maybe I was a little down on it, but episode 5 brought it back. It proved me wrong. To set up this time, the storytelling into Mark's past, understanding his childhood, and seeing it, visually seeing it all in this kind of state of imagination, this playground, this sandbox of this asylum, was super smart. It was the best way to represent everything that was happening inside Steven's mind, inside Mark's mind, everything that was going down, every thought, choice, decision, regression, and progression going on, and we could visually see it. So I think that was a really good way to do that. And not only a playground, which we can show all of that, but a playground where you can do anything you want. You can show anything you want. You can explore any avenue to this character. And so another thing that I really liked about this episode was kind of exploring the duality, really, of exploring Mark's past, which we got a lot of, along with him being in the Egyptian underworld. I thought that was really fascinating. We don't lose that mystical and mythical element that I have personally really liked in Moon Knight up until now, with Khonshu and the gods and, you know, Mr. Knight and turning the sky back and all of these things and kind of the court of the gods. I liked all of that. So attaching it to this underworld, this Egyptian underworld, with this kind of more focused, more honed in storyline of, we need the scales to balance or else we will be lost in the Egyptian underworld forever. I think that was a really good job of tethering it to this kind of mystical plane or mystical place, which is quite a funny thing to say, that we're grounding something to a mythical place, but it's true. And then we get the rest of the story to dive into Mark as a character in this sandbox and understand all of his history. That actually makes a lot of sense. The huge topic, the huge story in this episode was the death of his brother, Roro. So his little brother, and how his mom blamed him for it throughout the years, blamed Mark for the death of Roro, and how his mom beat him, how his mom essentially made his life a living hell. It is dark. It is an exceptionally dark episode. And I've got some Twitter takes that I'm going to read at the end of this pod. Couple people saying they're not enjoying the dark aspect as much, which I think is a fair point. I think that's very valid. And I do want to talk about that. Me personally, big fan. This is where Marvel shines, is where they take exceptionally real and thought-provoking and frankly hard-to-tackle topics like this, like an exceptionally traumatic childhood, and they force us to deal with it. They force the character to deal with it, to sit there in the pain and the agony and the trauma of what has perspired, and I just think it was done really well. This constant allusion to, you know, what's in the bedroom, I thought was a really good way to do it, good idea as well. And when we finally get there, we kind of click, we understand this kind of Stephen Grant of everything. So I like this storyline. I like this theme, this tone that Marvel has taken with this specific episode. I know it's not going to be for everybody, but I liked it for myself. The ability to portray just the sheer guilt that Mark faces is really impressive in this episode. Not only the guilt from taking Roro into the cave, knowing that he is the person that was responsible for that decision, for pushing his brother to go into the cave when he shouldn't have, when he knows that he shouldn't have. Mom said, don't do it when it's raining. But the guilt from his mom essentially forcing these words and these ideas upon Mark for so long that he has accepted them and he's chosen to live with this guilt. Again, I think the deeper storytelling here, when we sit with it, when we tackle it, is when Marvel shines the best and when it lets it unfold on screen. I want to talk about Khonshu for a second as well, because we get to see the very moment of the takeover when Khonshu takes over Mark's body for the very first time, which I thought was sick. That was pretty cool. The first switch to the suit, pretty dope. Great score. But even Steven realizes that Khonshu has always been taking advantage of Mark, even from the start, just like I've been mentioning in the past weeks. And I think this adds kind of this extra layer of complex storytelling to this episode, because sure, it's an Egyptian god. It's a little out there. I get it. But the fact remains that anybody can take advantage of a broken person. I think that is the goal. That is what we are trying to be told in this moment, is that people on the outside can recognize it, but the broken person, the broken human being, cannot always recognize it and is susceptible to this advantage, and people will prey on that. So I think that was a great little microcosm of kind of storytelling here. I said the score. I think the score did a great job of kind of shifting back and forth between this mystical, mythical, Egyptian-focused score and then something a little more intimate, something a little more grounded, string-based when we're dealing with Mark and Steven. I liked that a lot. Overarching questions of this episode of, you know, did he create Steven to continue to hide? Did he create Mark to exact retribution on his mother? Again, a high-level concept that I think is worth dissecting and discussing, and something of vast importance in the MCU and storytelling at large and shows, and something that I could spend an entire episode alone talking about, really. So I like that there are these layers to this episode that we are continuing to get. Another key moment here, understanding that his mom is dead. Finally breaking through to the truth. And I love this for a couple reasons here. It harkens back to episodes 1 and 2. When we honestly, we were just also innocent. Like, let's be real. We were just innocent. We were just along for the ride. Oscar Isaac was just, you know, we were hanging out, having a good time, having a little scares here and there. But we were also innocent. He was calling his mom. Never heard from her. We never heard her voice. We never saw them talking to each other. And I think that was a great kind of callback to that, how it's been happening continually. And then this scene, I think in relation to the buildup of everything else, how long it takes to get to a breakthrough is another important note. There's continued progress and then continued regression. We see that happen a couple times where it looks like we're progressing and then he wakes up and he freaks out on Harrow again. I think is done really good. It's not always a straight path to this kind of solution, quote unquote. Love the Ned Flanders reference. Fucking shout out Disney for being able to do that, for being able to toss a Ned Flanders reference in their own property. Just a little flex, honestly, of like, hey, oh yeah, we can do this. I like that. Mother Shiva, I think, is another very important moment. Again, for many, many reasons, but it's the switch to Steven. It's the switch from Mark drinking outside of his mother Shiva when his dad is asking him to come inside. He chooses not to. He chooses to continue to stumble down the road. And then he switches from Mark to Steven, and Steven immediately calls his mom. This scene alone, really the entire episode, really the entire show so far, but this scene alone is a perfect example of how Oscar Isaac is so bought into this character, so bought into this world, this project, deserves all the awards, all the Emmys. We're going to be talking about it and after the show, and I think it'll happen. I think this is the perfect scene for that. I've got one more thing I want to talk about, the ending. The ending of this episode is fucking perfect. That's it. I don't think there's any other way to describe it. And I'm really trying not to like get so high on this show, but you all know this was my most anticipated project of the year. And after a little bit of a lackluster response to episode 4 in comparison to a lot of other people, I feel like I can do this. I feel like I have earned the right to say this episode is fucking awesome. Two reasons here. So we've got Steven making the ultimate sacrifice, which I was a little shocked, caught me a little out of left field. We see this action scene again. They found a way to mesh this entirely intimate story with a little bit of action at the tail end, which I thought was a really good way to do things. You have Steven understanding that if Mark is me, then I am Mark. He takes up a bat, essentially, and just decks some dead people, and a big fan of that. I thought it was great. And essentially saves Mark. He makes the ultimate sacrifice. He jumps over the boat to save Mark, and Steven lands in the sand, unable to get back to the boat. Now, as soon as this sacrifice is made, as soon as Steven turns to sand, the scales finally balance. Remember, that was the goal of the entire episode, was to get these scales to balance, and they were not until this very moment. Mark is immediately transported to the Field of Reeds, where he will live in paradise in the underworld. This was said at the very beginning of the episode. That was the goal. We wanted it to balance so we could get to the Field of Reeds. Now, there's two very important things to note here. One, the final acceptance of who he is. That moment when Steven says, if Mark is me, then I am Mark. And then you've got some action. I like that a lot. That is the goal of this episode, is to take us to a state of self-acceptance. We progress and then we regress a little bit, but we get there in the end and it's done really well. Number two, and this is a personal thing, ending with a song that begins during the episode and then continues to the credits is fucking art. It's cinema. It's peak cinema. And it's part of the reason that I fuck so much with Loki episode 3. It's a big Breaking Bad vibe. This episode ends with a Spanish song, and it just, I love it. It makes me happier than like anything in the world. I think it's really a wonderful kind of way to put a nice ending on an episode, a nice ending on a scene like this, is to carry a through line from you've seen everything that you've seen until now, and then we're going to start playing this song to allow you to immerse yourself in the fact that this is coming to an end. It tells us, it cues us up, and it says, the credits are about 20 seconds away. Enjoy this moment for what it is. And for whatever reason, that ability to do this, it just gets me. It gets me every single time. I think it's the strongest episode of MCU shows yet. I truly, really do. Deep character storytelling. Again, the dark won't be for everybody. So I totally get that. And that is something I want to talk about quickly before I end this episode, because I know we're going over, and I feel like that's okay. I feel like that's okay for one of the best episode, for the best episode of Marvel Television yet. So at Julia Del Bell says that the episode was really good. I have to say, I think I'm getting slightly burnt out on Dark Marvel, though. It's just a lot of it coming in a row. And I agree, Julia. I do agree that it is dark. It is consistently focused on this darker side of storytelling. But I think that's the goal. I think that's the purpose of this show. I think that was the idea that Marvel had. And whether good or bad, I think it does fulfill this more niche adult market for something like this to deal with some pain, to deal with some trauma that might not be for everybody. And so I think that's important to fill that niche. But I totally see where you're coming from, that it's not for everybody. And you can get a little burnt out on it. At Mark Pacelli 13, I just want to give both Steven and Mark a hug. I feel you, bro. I feel you. I would love to give Mark and Steven a hug, not only because of this episode, because that would mean I was hugging Oscar Isaac, which would just be just some really, really good stuff. At Mighty_Jor on Twitter, after watching the episode, I can't tell if it was therapy or if I now need therapy. Seriously emotional throughout. You bring up a good point. I don't know if I need more therapy. I definitely have been wanting to start therapy. I think this is solidified that I need to go to therapy. This is essentially, I don't want to end up like Mark. I don't want to end up like Steven. So, you know, this was a really big episode. I feel like everybody's liking it quite a lot, myself included. And, you know, fucking Moon Knight. It's the Moon Knight era. I did say I was super excited for this show, and I'm roped back in. We've got one more week. We've got one more episode coming up next week. The finale. I can only guess what's going to happen. And my guesses would be wrong. I have no idea at all. What did you think of episode 5 of Moon Knight? Let me know on Twitter at 15 Minute Marvel. I've got a Multiverse of Madness primer coming on Friday. We are just one short week away from Doctor Strange and the Multiverse of Madness. I'm going to tell you everything you need to know going into the movie. I also have an extended Multiverse of Madness primer with some very fun guests over on the Patreon. So go check that out. It's coming out later this week and you won't want to miss it. Be sure to subscribe to this podcast on any major podcast platform. Huge shout out to the patrons of the pod: Brandon Clark, Kajir Shakib, Reagan Knopp, Alan Cole Peacock, Ben Lawhorn, Corellia Christina, Mike Zago, TJ Zwarch, and Jessica. Thank you all so much for your support. I will see you back here next time. I am Ethan Simi. And remember, always go higher, further, and faster.